and they can cut corners there. 27% of our healthcare dollars in this country go to administrative costs. Several years ago when our daughter was 3 or so, we were here at Holden, and she dislocated her elbow, a simple thing. Connie was swinging her around in the dining hall during a singing time, and so we had to race her out of the village. The village nurse said, could just pop it right in, but if there's a nerve in the way, it could cause damage, so you better get an x-ray. So in addition to the cost of taking the boat out to Chelan and so on, we went into the clinic. We're there for half an hour. We got an x-ray, looked clear. The doctor snapped it back in, put a thing on. And we got 3 bills, clinic bill, we got the x-ray lab bill, and the doctor bill. They totaled about $210, and I'm not gonna say that's good or bad, I wouldn't know how to compare it. But in the process of that, each of those 3 sent us a bill. We are then under our health plan supposed to send it to our health insurance place, and because it was out of payment, we were supposed to pay 20%, but they say we'll take care of it first. And by the time they responded to the 3 things, we had gotten probably 3 bills from each of them. The health plan started paying them off. By that time, at least one of them had been to a collection agency. I'm sure there were at least 40 pieces of correspondence. You hear how much we spend for business correspondence. Was it $5 a letter or something? Billing might be a little cheaper. Think how much money we're spending just of the insurance company and of the healthcare providers billing and collecting all the system. And that 27%, more than one of every $4 we spend on healthcare going for administrative costs, that doesn't count you, the consumer's time. And our health plan is a pretty nice one. We don't have to worry about it, all the bills and so on, but the people I've seen, often very sick, vulnerable people who don't have the time to try and figure out these paperwork things. I tried for several years ago for Connie's grandmother to try and figure out what these bills meant. You can't figure it out. I mean, figure out what your time is worth in trying to do that. That's on top of the 27% we pay into it. So what direction should we go? I think the goals of healthcare should be 1, good routine medical care. 2, extensive prevention and public health direction. Why do we have higher infant mortality rate than others? But we could do a lot more outreach and prevention. We have piecemeal things in bicycle helmets, piecemeal things in public safety things, piecemeal things in childhood immunization. But we have no overall system, no good system of using public health nurses wisely to reach out to at-risk people and make sure they get preventive care. We need, I would argue, a simple system with minimal paperwork. It's worth a lot to be able not to have to worry about it. And our own health plan, the only co-payments we have are for prescription drugs. So when we've been, for childbirth, for instance, the only bills we ever saw were $3 or $5 or $7 or whatever, co-payment for a drug or two. The rest, we never saw the bills. It was all taken care of internally in the health plan. Frankly, that's the way our health care plan ought to be, because if you think about who uses it, it's people who are sick, and they're the last thing in the world they should have to be doing is 1, fighting to get the health care they need, and 2, trying to fill out complex paperwork. The fourth thing should be universal coverage. We've already made a commitment since the 60s, not a good commitment, but at least we've made the commitment to take care of the poor. If you're on welfare, you can get medical care. But again, the working poor, who in this country, and I think the polls say 80%, I can't remember the specific, but it was overwhelming majority think that people who are working ought to be able to have affordable health care. And those are the ones who are least covered. Universal coverage is important. And then comprehensive benefits, chemical dependency. If you haven't experienced a family member or friend needing chemical dependency treatment, who cares? Why do you need it? Of course, the same thing with cancer or anything else. If you don't personally experience it, you don't see a need for it. But we waste so much money in not addressing chemical dependency. California did an estimate that for every dollar they spend as a public on chemical dependency treatment saves $7 the taxpayer. In 1991 to 92, for 1 year, I don't know what it was, it's some phenomenal amount of money, $300 million they put into it. they calculate within 3 years later they had saved $1.5 billion in reduced crime and healthcare expenditures because they were addressing a lot of chemical dependency needs. Mental health, our minds are less important than our bodies. I mean, even for that matter, dental care. I mean, dental care is not covered in most health plans. Are our teeth less important than our toes? I mean, I think you need comprehensive benefits to say you do it. In Minnesota, the political debate as we discuss this is, well, you know, any new mandates, if we had mental health coverage, that's going to make health care less affordable. The richest country on earth, frankly, I think we can provide a comprehensive set of benefits. And then one thing you have to make sure in designing a new healthcare system is that you don't neglect some of the things our country has done best in. Medical research, training, technology, which again we have been, the technology goes well because the companies that do the research get the money from it. The training of new doctors has been slipping because their teaching hospital system is failing to get the money they used to have. And you put together these goals, I don't have any polls saying where the public stands on this, but judging from the mail I get and from what I hear people talking about, the public does support this. And I've seen a number of proposals out there in terms of where they ask the public, would you support this concept or that concept, meaning universal coverage and comprehensive benefits. And the public is overwhelmingly, by political margins, landslide margins, supports these ideas. So we don't get anywhere. Why? Well, again, as I've talked in several other talks, lobbies and interest groups have a vested interest in keeping it the way it is. Was it Harry and Louise? Those TV ads when Clinton's health care plan came out, the TV commercials about the couple talking about how this was going to mean this or that kind of thing. And it killed any chance for Clinton's plan, and I got to say they certainly made it easy for him by developing such a complex plan. I think when they first came out, they had books this thick, and you ask the people who were advocating in favor of the system how it worked, it was too complex for them to explain. And in the political world, you don't always have a chance to explain it. I was going to say the two things that Clinton administration did very well early on when they were trying the healthcare thing. One, recognizing a need for universal coverage to cover everybody. And then number two, I remember on some national speech, Clinton got out his wallet and said, you know, here you got a Social Security card. I don't know how many people carry them, but you got a Social Security card. Now we're going to have a health security card, which again goes back to what I think the concept in the New Deal was, we're going to provide health care to people. You don't fight, and Clinton said this very clearly, you don't have to worry about who's going to pay the bills. When you're sick, you get the medical care you need, and then you worry about it. And I think that's important in designing a new system, that you have to cover those things. I referred earlier to my personal health care thing. I have the same plan or choice of three or four plans other state employees have. And it's been wonderful. I've heard complaints about it, but it's a nonprofit HMO, one of the first in the country, and it had the idea of what I thought managed care ought to be. When I first got a job, it was a company I picked right away, and they had a nurse line you can call right away. And when we had children, and you have a fever of 104 degrees, you know that's deadly for an adult. What about with a kid? What do? You panic, and at 10:30 at night, there's a nurse line to call. The good prevention efforts. They're constantly doing educational things to do it. Referral to specialists, which is one of the problems. The so-called managed care. I like the idea of having somebody help manage your care, but we've got managed denial of care. Most HMOs are, what do we do? Well, we'll manage a way to not give you care. You have to fight to get a specialist. And they say if you're an advocate, if you're a good advocate for yourself, you'll get the care you need. In most places, that's far from universal. But how many people, when they're really sick, have the ability to fight for that? And how many people know? You listen to your doctor, and they tell you need this, and, oh, we don't cover this. Certain cases, you can get care. I mean, in a good plan, they will give you care if you fight hard for it, but There are lots of places you go to lawyer to go to court. Our current attorney general in Minnesota got into office largely because he ran TV ads talking about people who had cancer who health plans wouldn't cover for certain treatments. And they're alive today. The doctors said that without this treatment, you don't have a chance. It's still somewhat, in the insurance industry terms, experimental, so we won't cover it. And our new attorney general got into office largely because he could point out things like how he saved this woman's life because he fought in court. He said, you know, you got a couple of days to get a hearing and so on to do it. Otherwise, the person doesn't get the care they need, they die. It's too late to deal with. But our plan has been, it's covered everything. Prescription drug coverage. It's provided dental, orthodontist care, everything. And I think that's appropriate. And I, as a public official, again, mine's not better than our state employees. They have the same plan options. We pay some, the state pays some. And one of the things we ought to do, when you look at Canadian system, people say, well, they're cutting corners now. And people aren't going to have the best care, so they're going to have a separate system outside of it that you go to if it doesn't work. Well, the best way to prevent cutting corners is to make sure that everyone, including public officials, are in the same plan. When our family gets sick, when we get sick, I want to make sure my family is well taken care of. You think I'm going to vote for a system that's going to deny people medical care? If my family's got to live under the same plan? And Minnesota Senator Paul Wellstone has said very many times that he wanted to make sure that, he said that U.S. congressmen, senators should be given no better care than the least of their constituents. And if you do that, I'll guarantee you there won't be corner cutting, because who doesn't want to? I mean, the first question when you get medical care shouldn't be, and I don't think any of us want it to be, how are we going to pay the bill? How much is it going to cost, doctor? The first thing you want is, what's the best care? That's what I think. Universally, people want to know, what's the best care? And yes, we want to hold down costs, but the first thing we want is the appropriate care. And so I think it's very critical that we make sure that public officials do not get better care than others. Then they will fight to make sure everyone has the same care. As I mentioned, managed care has been co-opted in what it means from what I thought it ought to mean to what is now something that I think is a big negative. Basically, we managed to find a way to deny you the care you need by having a gatekeeper out there, and you have to go through that gatekeeper. And in the long run, if the goal is to make sure people get the medical care they need, you can't see that as anything other than a very expensive addition, because if people are going to get to the specialist they need and they have to go through this doctor and they have to try two or three times before they can get to the specialist they need, you're just wasting more doctor visits. But the reason they find it more efficient and cheaper is because they know some way or another they're going to block people from getting the care they finally need. So what's the solution? I'll tell you my personal one and a little more of the and then the politics of it, and then open up for discussion. I happen to favor a universal healthcare system. They used to call them single payer systems. I've decided, you know, I think we should do a privately administered one, contract to somebody to do all the paperwork. Not that the government can't do it. I mean, Social Security, what is it? Less than 1% of Social Security costs go into administration. People get their checks, it works out, it's a well efficient run system. But I think we all know the politics of it is government can't do anything right, and therefore have a privately administered universal healthcare system. I think it ought to have, I don't mind co-payments, but they got to be reasonable and they got to be based somehow or another in a way that somebody doesn't have high co-payments that they can't afford them. I think if you have a parent with a sick child, you want them to go see a doctor first, not to say, you know, I got this car repair bill, I've got this, got the food bill, got everything else. I can't pay all these bills. And, you know, going into the doctor and it's a $30 copayment to go in there, I can't afford to go right now. You don't want kids to be denied care or anyone to be denied care that way. So co-payments are fine, just make sure they're set up in a reasonable way. Second, the cost. Who pays for it? again, the people who are most able to afford healthcare right now tend to pay the least, as the example of prescription drugs. It tends to be people who are chronically ill, people who are elderly, who don't have healthcare benefits that include prescription drugs. They pay, as I said, maybe twice as much on average for their prescription drugs as somebody else. And how do you bring down the cost? Well, I was going to suggest that other countries that have universal health care, that have good health care systems, they do it by having government negotiate the prices. The Canadian provinces, why do they have lower prices? They tell the drug companies, you're going to negotiate with us and we're going to bring down the cost. You can't bring them down to nothing. They're not going to sell them drugs below cost. They're making good money. Matter of fact, the pharmaceutical industry, according to this new study I referred to earlier, their profits, they are the most profitable industry in the United States on the stock market. Their rate of return on equity is about, I can't remember, 50% more than the average. They're doing very well. Matter of fact, this Boston University study said they could provide free prescription drugs for everyone in the country who doesn't get them, who can't afford them, whatever, and they'd still be the most profitable industry on the stock market. The most profitable, even after they provided universal drug coverage to people in this country. The politics, head of Minnesota Physicians for National Healthcare told me a couple years ago, John, I think we're going to get some real serious healthcare reform a lot sooner than I thought. Well, that's probably starting from a pessimistic thing, you'll get it sooner. I said, why do you think so? He said, the system is deteriorating a lot faster than I thought it would. And in recent years, I mean, I've been in office for 12 years, and there have always been people who have legitimate problems with healthcare, and they see it getting worse and worse. One doctor contacted me last year and said that he himself went to a clinic, a healthcare clinic here, because doctors used to provide free care to each other in exchange. They can't do that anymore. And this guy had a series of shots. He called it a profile 12. I don't know what it is, but it's a series of blood tests, I guess. And he said he paid 30 some dollars for it a year ago. New health plan took over this clinic. He was charged 200 some dollars for the same series of tests. They blame the federal government and how you bunch the tests together. But saying you could get 12 tests for 30 some dollars, now he has to pay 200 some. He was just livid. And we've been fighting for a year trying to get more information why it has to be this way. They did knock down his bill on it one time, but what about people who don't know? They're told now, oh, you don't need this one blood test. You need this one and this one and this one and this one and this one, and that's going to cost you $200. Well, it's a preventive heart series of tests, apparently. And he said, how many people are going to not go in because they can't afford the $200? And doctors are increasingly becoming supportive. 20 years ago, AMA wouldn't talk about universal health care. A few years ago, they had a much publicized thing that they agreed by a majority vote at their national convention to at least discuss the issue. And again, I think those of you who either, if any of you are doctors, or those of you who know doctors, will hear many times from doctors who say they're not allowed to practice medicine anymore. A friend of mine who's a doctor said that he was really livid once. He was trying to provide some care to a woman, and he knew she needed a certain test, and the health plan covered some alternative, and he had given her that, and it didn't work. So he needed this other one, so he called the insurance company, as he had to do, for approval. And the guy at the other end of the phone started telling, well, what about this one? I tried that. Well, then this is the next alternative you should try. Well, that won't work here because of this. And the guy's arguing with him for a while. He said, wait a minute, where'd you get your medical degree? Of course, the guy doesn't have a medical degree. He's working, he's a young employee for an insurance company. He's reading charts and telling you, no, you can't do it this way. And arguing with a doctor over what kind of medical care you need is pretty serious problems. And I think doctors are recognizing that insurance companies are calling the shots in this. And therefore, I think you get back to this thing where the public will is growing. I think the public will has already been there. It's the political will that has to follow. And somehow or another, we got to build the public support strong enough in favor of a simple enough program that you can't have those Harry and Louise or whatever the names of people in those AMA or those health insurance lobby ads that killed it off. I don't expect any action at the federal level in the next few years. I think the best likelihood for getting some change is going to be in state legislatures around the country. People do have a little better access to their state legislators. I think it's going to be one state or another trying some serious reforms. Minnesota tried several years ago, but it was basically a plan. I liked half of it. I liked the part that said we were going to provide universal health care, but the rest of it seemed to be more just into, it was pushed more towards the managed care in the bad sense of the managed care. We're going to have these companies try and compete with each other in cutting what they do. And that's why we get all these debates about how expensive these mandates to cover this kind of cancer or that kind of treatment. But we need a public support that's going to be able to withstand a fierce array of TV and radio and newspaper ads telling people how, boy, if this happens, you're going to have no health care. Boy, this is going to be worse than anything. So I think the only way we're going to get support is if the public speaks out and they're ready to withstand the fierce onslaught of negative ads. Anyway, with that, I wanted to open it up for discussion on any part of this, either examples of what people have gone through or what they see as the prospects of it or what they see the biggest problems are.
I think there's one big piece missing, and that's alternative health care, which can often prevent things that would be much worse and take care of problems that doctors don't really have anything to help with, like homeopathy and naturopathy and different kinds of massage and manipulative techniques and acupuncture. I've had problems solved in one visit to an acupuncturist that took 6 months with no help and lots of money going through my health, regular health care. And that's not covered.
Right.
They tried to get it covered in Washington, but it isn't working out. I don't know all the ins and outs of that. But
I was going to say that that's a good point. And I do think that's one part of the look at comprehensive benefits that ought to be covered in there. And one of the difficulties is what should be allowed, what shouldn't be allowed. And in the past, the medical community, the medical doctor community, has been very fiercely opposed to anything, chiropractic care, anything they fought against. Because they had all the answers at the time. And I think Norman Cousins of Saturday Evening Post, when he started his cure, I don't know whether this is about 20 years ago now, when he had some fatal illness, and he basically laughed himself to better health. His doctor prescribed a couple of things he asked him to, and he rented hilarious movies, brought him into his hospital room, and his doctor said, you know, I don't know how this happened, but we've come to learn more and more the importance of things like laughter, as laughter is the best medicine. Well, Norman Cousins ended up being on the medical faculty at UCLA Medical School, the first non-physician ever to serve on the faculty. Why? Well, there was a lot of merit in what he was doing. And there are more and more alternative care providers who are medical doctors who are thinking that a big part of what's there is missing. And I think in Minnesota, they've had some small steps forward because you get medical doctors who say, you know, there's more to it than just what the medical profession has provided in the past. And it's always going to be tough because there are, remember, was it about 15 years ago, the Laetrile scam where people were taking apricot pits was going to be the solution to health. There's difficulty with that yet. As you mentioned, acupuncture has been used for thousands of years. Herbal types of medicine. I remember a public radio story several years ago about a medical researcher was talking to a native doctor, whatever type of alternative medicine it was somewhere in the rainforest, and they were trying to replicate some of his drugs, and because they were finding out that certain types of illnesses were being cured by things that he was doing, and Western medicine didn't solve it, and he asked, okay, how do we put this in? And they had a 5-minute story on public radio about, what do you put into this medicine? He said, you use a pinch of this, okay, pinch of this, and how much of this? They measured his pinches, and they were incredibly precise, the measurement. But the doctor tried to duplicate this, and it didn't work. He said, well, what's wrong? Here, I'm doing this and doing this. And he said, well, you didn't include this other one. Well, you didn't tell me that. It was a difference in communication. But basically, the doctor found out that they were studying it because this doctor was using things that weren't tested, weren't approved, weren't whatever, but they did make a difference. And I think alternative care is going to be a part of, or should be a part of, comprehensive benefits, though, as I mentioned, it's hard to draw the line sometimes.
Yes. I serve on the board of directors for a hospital in Southern California. And I don't find the doctors be as rosy as you are in terms of universal health care.
They don't want
the government in on it, and they don't want the insurance companies in on it. They're in it because of a matter of trust. Right now, Medi-Cal hospitals are a lot, they're not making anything on Medi-Cal. They're losing on Medi-Cal. Medi-Cal is for the poor in California. And they barely make break even with Medicare. So they don't trust the government to take on a national program like this because the hospitals and doctors see this as a no-win issue. Also, they think the insurance companies are taking a whack at them. They know that with the government... And already the doctors are doubling their patient load to make the same amount of money that they did 10 years ago. They figure with the government in on it, it will be waiting lines or what. They just don't see the government having a solution because the government has never had an effective solution in the past other than a watered down one. And they point to England and Canada, for that matter, as having a two-tiered health system because the rich still will not, as you said, even though the politicians are covered in Britain, they still go and pay an extra amount of money to see a private physician or come to America for medical care. So I'm just speaking from what I'm hearing, they're not in agreement that universal governmental sponsored or privatized under government auspices, they just don't trust it.
Right, I didn't intend to sound real optimistic about how that was going to happen. I was going to say I think we've got a scandalous lack of, is a non-system of healthcare. And the one doctor I quoted, as I said, was a supporter of national healthcare. He was head of Minnesota Physicians for National Healthcare. That's not the typical physician. I didn't mean to imply that. Matter of fact, when I mentioned the AMA vote several years ago, it was to, for the first time, discuss it. It was not to support it. And again, the fact that they didn't even want to talk about it in the past, I think leads to the point you have. They're sick of, they're working twice as hard for the same amount of money as they used to in terms of it. They're sick of insurance companies telling them what to do.
And already I think Medicare and Medi-Cal.
Yeah. They're leery because they haven't seen anything other than corner cutting from government and the insurance companies. And that's why I think they're beginning to realize they're not winning under the current system, which is why they're willing to discuss alternatives. But, right, there's a big difference between discussing and supporting. And I did not mean to imply that I think doctors are, wow, we're going to change this. I think they're sick of what's happening now, and they realize it's not producing better care.
Because from a political standpoint, it's also going to be, because it's going to cost more if it's going to be a plan that will satisfy everybody. And that's either going to mean higher taxes for all of us.
Except if you take out much of that 27% of insurance coverage, paperwork costs, plus the public share of the paperwork. I've seen, it's not just the paperwork part of it. I know right now I've heard of one case in southern Minnesota where a woman who had need for certain mental health coverage, it was being provided by, it was going to be funded by the county. So the one county where the woman lived, they didn't have the right care, so they sent her to another county for it. She got the treatment she needed. She improved. So So they said, okay, now she's improved, we're gonna cut her off. And she came back, her healthcare condition deteriorated. Again, there's a lot of savings by doing things up front, which prevents a lot of waste. That's not administrative waste, that's waste by not doing the care when you need it, not preventing it, because healthcare problems often get worse if they're left untreated. So I refuse to believe, matter of fact, our legislative auditor was charged several years ago with doing a study of several healthcare alternatives, and they claim that providing a universal plan with some co-pays would cost the state $700 million less than their current system does per year. $700 million is a lot of money, but you know how much people spend in healthcare. It's a, what is it, 13 or 14% of our gross national product. It's a lot. I would disagree with you that it has to cost more if you take those other savings out of it, things that are counterproductive. But I'm not saying that adding another fifth of the population to coverage is cheap. It adds a full 20% more. But if 27% can be cut down to much more reasonable...
But you're wanting more care and wanting Cadillac care for everybody. It's got to cost something.
It's going to cost more if you're going to provide chemical dependency, but then you have the savings in healthcare and crime and other things. I happen to think you address problems up front. It's an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I'm not saying your upfront healthcare costs would not be more to address chemical dependency. I'm saying that your healthcare costs several years down the road are significantly lower because you address those. So, yes, if you're going to just do nothing more than say, okay, you got 20% of the population does not have healthcare, we're going to provide it. And certain things, orthodontic care, those are going to cost you more. Because we're not providing them now, and frankly, people who have very crooked teeth and they can't afford it, they just ignore it. But I was going to say, for the most care, the mental health, the chemical dependency, we have a very slow way of changing things, because I know Bell South in Atlanta, one of the Baby Bell telephone companies, their employees several years ago, they provided mental health coverage, a full equivalent benefits were there. It took them years for some of the employees to fight to get it. They got it, and the plan found out they saved mental health care costs by providing a comprehensive range of benefits, not just the hospitalization when people are desperately ill. And so my point is, I think by doing these things that save the administrative costs and doing the others, I would argue you could do pretty much extend coverage to others and have a better system as long as you're doing these things all at once. And will we get there? It seems to me we're not headed down that road now, but I mean, the not sarcastic comment, but the comment that one physician made about the system's deteriorating faster than he thought, I think we're coming to a crisis stage where people will take a look at those other alternatives. Over there, then there, then...
I agree with you that it is coming to a crisis. Everybody's, I'm working from that perspective, but in terms of the solution.
And I don't know that the doctors are going to be there for a long time, but I think in the past they just dismissed, they don't anymore because they're sick of what they've got.
Part of the problem that we don't have good data on this whole situation. I don't know of any hospital that knows what its cost for medical education is. We're able to project how much we're going to lose. The University of Minnesota expected to lose $50 million a year if it didn't go through with the merger with Fairview. But, and that was because of Medicare, or the cuts. It would seem to me the government's not intending to make hospitals lose money, but we can't project a cost well. So to some degree, it's a lot of speculation on where should we go? Is there a way that we're ever going to get to getting better data so we can make more, better?
Let me ask you, because you're obviously somewhat familiar with the University of Minnesota case. I sort of assumed the university understood what its costs were. It's just a question of they were not connecting the two. Federal government and reimbursement for medical assistance is not calculating what the hospital needs to do it. They're figuring out what we can do it at a non-teaching hospital. We want to provide the cheapest care. That means if we have to provide medical education at the same time, we're not going to pay our share of it, which is why they have the problem. Do you think it is the hospitals didn't know either, or it's just that the federal government didn't care to respond to it?
It's very, very difficult to project what the cost of medical education is, because when I provide one treatment, I do eight tests, was six of the eight tests for education, or were three of the eight tests for education? Okay. Because each case seems to be slightly different.
So
being able to project that is really difficult.
But let me ask you one more thing on it. You're giving an example of you, I presume, as either physician or teaching physician or medical student, trying to determine how much of your stuff is education related as opposed to otherwise. You're saying that in that case, the university can't estimate overall of all of our medical students, here's how many tests would be training purpose and how many would be the medical care?
They started out with a $13 million projection per year. But trying to get to the right answer, there's been a number of consultants hired, and everything I've heard from around the country, out east they can't figure it out any better. Maybe this gentleman here's got a teaching school, but I haven't heard of hospitals that they can project that well, because it's so
difficult to calculate.
Difficult to say one case is in one category versus another category.
Okay, and in our
same thing
in our current
Medicare
system, where we expect the cost of teaching hospitals to be covered by reimbursement for medical procedures, I don't know. I mean, then you're going to have to eventually, the hospitals, after being denied the adequate funds for it for a certain number of years, will somehow or another, we hope, get the reimbursement either from insurance companies and government or somewhere, because they need to do it in order to continue the medical education. But I was going to say, one of the things we've done better than anyone in the past was our medical education. And if states don't step in to cover those gaps, that's going to fall apart quickly.
And you know, places like the University of Minnesota are feeling that.
Yeah. Which is why that was one of the academic health center was one of their highest priorities.
Mm-hmm.
Over there.
I'd like to take this to a little lower level for a minute. I think that most of the people here are probably on Medicare. And so those of us who are on Medicare and have a supplemental insurance company who is an HMO or thereabouts, we are not allowed to have the doctor of our choice. And that, I think, is one of the big points in this whole system. We have to go to a doctor who, you know, we switch from one doctor who understands our situation, if it's a chronic situation. We go to another doctor, and at this point, he doesn't care. He or she does not care. They do not have the time. They're not allowed to give you the time that they used to give you. So now we go through a mill type of situation. And I think that is a big issue for Medicare people who are in supplement.
Choice of provider.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not just,
that's not just Medicare
people. It's
any supplemental insurance.
Yeah. But it's not even supplemental. It's a lot of health plans have,
yeah,
you have this choice of doctors and stuff. And frankly, I guess in our plan, we can pay more to go out of network in it, but basically as long as we have that choice of providers and it's the same one and we've been in it for 20 years, great. But then all of a sudden the state decides, well, we're not going to use this provider anymore, or you change jobs and something else, and
yeah,
and all of a sudden, oh, you can check any one of these doctors. Your doctors, no, they're not in it. And I was going to say, that's part of what people consider quality health care, is having a relationship with a doctor that trusts them and knows their history. But I think that's a big part of it, too, making sure we have the provider choice. And under the managed care system, we've gotten to the point where there are many people who have been complaining that they're willing to provide services for the same amount per procedure, the same terms and conditions, we'll handle all the cases you give us, everything else. And certain health plans are saying, no, we've got our 10 doctors in this area, we're not gonna throw any business your way. And we've had several attempts in recent years that HMOs have been fighting to say that if somebody's willing to provide a certain procedure at a certain cost, and it meets the terms, if a health plan says we'll provide this much in payment for this particular procedure, then anyone who's willing to meet those terms and conditions can play as part of the network then.
But it's a hard fight. The other part of this too is the fact that in the state of Washington, we're losing so many insurance providers. We have very few. I mean, in the eastern part of the state, I don't know about the west part, but in the smaller, more rural areas, surrounding
just going out.
Yeah, they're just dropping off like flies, so that leaves very few providers now.
Yeah, we have in Minnesota, I think three or four providers now provide 3/4 of the care.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you're relying on a competitive model for doing this, there's not a lot of competition when in many communities there's Blue Cross. That's it. In a lot of communities, yeah, you have one provider. That's a good point. Over here, sir. Yes.
Along with the lady over there, many of us who are retired, and of course I'm one who retired from a major corporation and was able to carry on our medical insurance for my family at the same fee I paid when I was employed, and that's less than $40 a month. And now that I am 65, of course, some aspects you lose. You lose the dental, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to have dental work when you're in excess of 65, it's going to be expensive. But it does provide the secondary carrier. And all they did was reduce my premium a little bit to compensate, because that's not the primary carrier. But those who retire or with small corporations who can't afford those major medical programs, and that's where the HMOs in the state of Washington said, like in Spokane area or Pullman area or something like that, say, we're not going to cover anyone, we're going to cancel your coverage in that area. Those people or those small companies are in a world of hurt, because for them to pick up a policy is going to be substantially more than what they're paying a given HMO to do. And there's apparently nothing that the state at this point is doing to correct that issue. And it's going to be very, very expensive if some of the small communities can get any coverage.
You know, in a lot of attempts when you have people who are difficult to cover, Minnesota has had for, I think, 20-some years, a pool that's paid into, not by the federally, the plans that the federal government prohibits us from stepping into, but every other plan pays into this difficult case load, people who are denied coverage. The state has an alternative plan for them, which always runs a deficit, which the insurance companies have to pay into. But we got more and more people who are being, insurance by its nature of how they work, they'd rather cover only people who have no risk. I mean, they want to provide the fewest possible benefits. You got cancer, here's a Band-Aid. They want to provide the fewest possible benefits, and they want to deal with the healthiest portion of the population. And if you're going to provide a universal system, you got to have a way for picking up everybody.
State of Washington has a similar insurance pool, but there are limited dollars in it, and not everybody is going to be accepted in if they fall out for some reason. So it isn't a universal coverage for, you know, if I fall out of the pool and the type of treatment I have to have is not covered, I may not be under the insurance pool.
Yeah.
So it's not the answer.
I'm a U.S. citizen that lives in Calgary, Alberta, and I've worked in hospitals in Edmonton and at the University Hospital in Madison and Children's Health Center in Minneapolis. And I'd like to say something about the doctors. First of all, they get all their bills paid. And I know that wasn't true in the United States. And
Can I ask for clarification? Are you saying that their bills, in other words, if I'm providing care to you and I require this test and this lab work and everything else, my bills are they're going to be paid in Calgary, you're saying? And they were
all
not.
All my doctor's bills would be paid 100%, but poor people or poor working people or even lower middle class people often don't pay their doctor bills. And doctors do not get 100% of their bills paid for. And you cannot sue a doctor in Alberta, and I don't believe in the other provinces, but I have a way of handling my grievances. And the Medical Association in Alberta, every year in January in the newspaper, tells what doctors they have disciplined because patients have written in and they have not been treated right, and so their practicing privileges are taken away from them. And as far as cost goes, and my benefits as a patient, I can always get a second opinion. That doesn't cost me more. And based on my income tax every year, or anyone's income tax, it's determined how much they pay for health care. Everyone doesn't get free health care in Canada. Wealthy people have to pay into it. It's based on your income. And I happen to get free health care because of the income on my income tax return. But wealthy people have to pay. It's on a scale. And not only that, this doesn't have to do with health care, but on my income tax return, they also decide about a federal tax we have at 7%, and it's called goods and services tax. And because of my income, I get a $76 refund every quarter of the year to moderate incomes too. So, and I have a nephew that practices in Calgary that's a U.S. citizen, and they aren't all coming down is what I'm to the U.S., but there's quite a mutual exchange.
I was going to say that one of the political difficulties, I mean, so what happened, the Clinton's health plan, which got heavily attacked, one of the things that if you have a universal system and in effect the government is collecting the money to pay for it, it's no longer healthcare premiums, it's taxes, and everybody hates taxes. Even if the total dollar amount you were paying into it was less than you're paying in premiums, nevertheless, well, that's taxes and we hate taxes. So politically, I was going to say that any move towards a healthcare plan, a healthcare reform, is going to be difficult by the nature of our political debate on tax policy. Because it's not, all of a sudden, no longer you don't use the word premium, you use the word taxes.
We don't call it, they don't call it that.
No, I know, but it, in effect, it's the same, it's the dollars they're going to pay for medical care.
And they have the highest quality of living in the world, according to the United Nations, for the last 3 years.
Longest life expectancy and child infant mortality rates.
Mm-hmm.
And it is again, and it's 100% of the population covered, which is a lot, it's 20% better than we have, and it's still several hundred dollars per capita.
The federal government gives the provinces, like the states, the administration of exactly the benefits aren't the same in every province, mm-hmm. but they try to determine, I got a letter while I was here, what benefits are going to be increased next year. That they felt, they did a survey of our health care, and what was most needed and maybe not covered, so they're increasing it.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to you more about this sometime. But I have a question about, since a number of people in here mentioned their Medicare supplemental policy people, and I don't know how many of you have that, but of those who you do, how many of you have prescription drug coverage under your plans?
Copayment.
Yeah. Significant, like copay that's like $10 a prescription?
No.
Five?
$20.
10%.
20?
10%.
System pays 80%.
Oh, okay. How many have Medicare supplement plans that don't have prescription drug coverage? Because in Minnesota now, I think every one of the plans that provides Medicare supplemental policies, I think The drug coverage in a lot of them is more expensive than the entire rest of the supplement plan. Is that the case for some of you? Can you have a choice of buying the two plans?
You have a choice of taking, reducing your payments by taking up, you pay a greater percentage of the drug costs. In other words, they have, Blue Cross Blue Shield has this program where if you take, I think it's, they will cover 90% of the drug cost. If you get on to 80%, well, they cover 80%.
So in other words, it's not drug coverage or no drug coverage, it's you choose how much of it you
have. Correct.
Copay,
right.
We have a...
We had when we were in Minnesota and still have Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, and it covered prescriptions when you're in Minnesota. When we move to Florida, it doesn't cover the prescriptions.
Mm-hmm. Or physical.
Yeah.
Interesting. We have to go to Minnesota to do that.
That's efficient. You won't go for as many physicals. That's what they
are. I think, John, one of the problems that you have with people that have pre-existing conditions is really tough because in our case, neither Mary or I could be covered by a, although I work for a small company, we can't be covered because of pre-existing conditions. So we have to shell out $500 a month for supplementary coverage over and above what we pay for Medicare. That's a chunk of money. And I mean, if you don't want to pay that, you want to go on a HMO, and you can't go to a doctor that of your choice, mm-hmm. It's very difficult. I mean, in my case, I have to go to Mayo Clinic and an HMO will cover it. So, so you're forced to take a, you're forced to pay out coverage to get the doctors that you want.
I'd like to speak for HMOs because I hear a lot of negative comments about not having choice of doctors, etc. My wife and I were covered by a medical plan. We got to adding it up one time, what we were paying out for doctors and things. This was through Aetna, as I recall. It was more than the premiums for the HMO. When we joined, there were a large selection of doctors. We didn't like the first one or two. And I think that's true in general practice. You go out and find a doctor in a new community. You may like them, you may not like them, but you have the opportunity to look for one that you do care for. The comments about managed care, HMOs, there are two kinds in the country. There are those for profit and those that are cooperatives. I happen to belong to a cooperative. My wife got cancer. We had doctors from five different hospitals from the Hutchinson Cancer Institute. She was under treatment for 20 months. I saw some of the bills. It came to about $250,000. Mm-hmm. I paid $25. Mm-hmm. Nobody can tell me that that wasn't a good place to be. She didn't survive, but I couldn't have asked for nicer treatment. In fact, I was in one day, a doctor came into the room to making his rounds, and you know how busy doctors are. And he said, after he had checked my wife, he came out and he says, how are things going? And I said, she doesn't think she's ever going to go home. Without a word, he turned around, went back in that room, and spent 30 minutes talking and assuring her. So I personally am a strong advocate of some HMOs.
And I was going to say, your distinction between for-profit and non-profit, Minnesota does not allow HMOs to be for-profit, which is a major difference in how they work. And again, my own plan is an HMO too. And we've had extensive medical use this year for several family members. And we've had wonderful doctors. I mean, I think they've got very good doctors in the plan, though I've heard about some criticism of our HMO from others too. I think the only thing I'd say about the choice of doctor thing is it works wonderful for us and for you and others in terms of choice because there are good doctors in there. The difficulty becomes under our current patchwork system becomes I switch jobs and I get a different health plan because I can't choose the one I've got. Then they all 20 years of work with certain doctors and getting them to know everything about you and people you trust and which ones you choose to use, then all of a sudden forget them. And with the heavy turnover of employment and so on, I have no problem with the kind of thing. I just wish the system was big enough to include choice of all the doctors, you know. But I think your distinction between the for-profit and non-profit is an important one, because it doesn't mean everyone that's for-profit is good. It's bad and the other way around, but still it's a distinction that's worth noting.
There's one other thing that's there that you generally don't have in private practice, and that is every medication that's prescribed to you is part of a central record, and so you don't end up with conflicting medications where you went to one doctor for this ailment and another doctor for a different ailment. Some pharmacies now will do that for you.
Yeah, I noticed, I think you're right, a lot of pharmacies have been changing it, and there are a lot of fee-for-service type of medical plans that are doing better at that. Again, I like, as I said at the beginning, the concept of managed care is a very good one. It's been corrupted in a lot of ways to be denial of care, but if it's done right, and the cooperative run HMOs have the best chance of any of the plans, it seems to me, in terms of delivering that, because we as members have some say in that. And I really don't know anybody who says, you know, I'd rather cut 20% in costs and not cover these things that I might get. We all might say, well, let's not cover a chemical dependency if we don't know somebody chemically dependent. That's my whole point about the developing a system-wide thing so everybody's covered. Because if California's study, again, 1991 through 94 study, was saying they're saving $7 in reduced costs for every dollar spent, we want to make sure people are covered for those things. If one plan doesn't, let's go find a different way to do it.
I worked for 8 years in a cooperative, and it's probably the same one you're talking about, in the clinic. And I liked it there. At that time, there was one nurse for every doctor. And they kind of stressed preventative medicine. Rather than have people come in sick, they'd rather have them stay well, you know, which makes sense. As time progressed, however, the nurses were laid off, and there was one nurse maybe to five or six doctors. And now, maybe, Ed, you can tell me, because I don't know what's happened, because then I got riffed, okay, as there were too many people in the laboratory. So I got ripped, and then other people got hired with less, less training than I had, and the nurses got replaced with people with less training than they had, and the last I heard in the paper, they had to merge with another HMO, and which I think is really a shame. The hospital closed, or partly closed. The clinic is still going. And I'm wondering what's happened to group health. You know, what happened?
Well, I think like any business, they're faced with rising costs. They're faced with competition of companies coming in that want to buy them out and then use for profit. I think what happened also is that hospitals recognized duplication of facilities. Mm-hmm. So what you're talking about as far as the hospitals, two of them merge their functions, but they put like all surgery in one, all obstetrics in another. So some departments did get shuffled around, mm-hmm. but I think the overall advantage to both plans, to both of the major companies, was an improvement in service.
Well, I don't see it that way exactly. Personally, I don't go to that. I just was employed there, but I saw quite a change over time. Of the kind of health care that I perceive people were getting.
I have heard, and I don't know any plans, and I don't know the case in Seattle there, but I have heard in a number of places where they are now providing, they're using fewer registered nurses and they're using more hospital orderly types who have a name badge on and people, whether that's a quote efficient use of whatever or they have people who are untrained doing what they shouldn't be doing, I think is a good question. I did not realize we are past the 9:30 hour. I will formally close it off here, but I'm happy to stay around and talk more about healthcare with anyone that wants to. Thank you for your attention tonight.